With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom. Simply visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate to make a difference today.
I always look forward to talking with our next guest. Beaming in from Uppsala, Sweden, that is Associate Professor. He's a Kiwi based at Tareba University, Riga, but in Sweden physically. Expert on Russian mass media, terrorism, public diplomacy, the relationship between politics, information, armed conflict, crisis management. And that is Greg Simons. Greg, great to have you back on RCR. And it's great for us to be back. Okay.
Yes, Paul. Yes. Good to see you guys back.
Have you been following the developments from Sweden?
Yeah, I've been following the drama. It's good to see it's heading the right way.
Okay, I want to talk about two recent speeches our foreign minister has made and what that tells us about where we are at. We've had a change of government, and some would have wanted to see maybe a change in messaging or maybe a pulling back to a more independent stance. And I don't know where you want to start on this. Maybe his speech to the New Zealand Institute of International Affairs, or the other speech that we've been looking at too, and that was to the New Zealand China Council. Let's start with the first one I mentioned. Challenges and opportunities. Well, he certainly lists many challenges. Would it be fair to say that I probably could have written bullet point line by line pretty well if I was to be thinking very conventionally and in a kind of neocon sort of way, though I don't like to use that word, that descriptor, kind of predictable? What do you reckon?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, absolutely predictable. I mean, you wouldn't see a script any different written from some kind of, as you say, neocon pundit in the Beltway in Washington, D.C. Yeah. I mean, it's just purely this choir music, if you want to say, which the so-called rules-based order, which is run from Washington, D.C., says. Nothing special in it at all.
Yeah, whose rules? When you're talking rules-based, whose rules?
Well, these are, how would you say, flexible, because, you see the contradictions in this today, especially with Gaza, when you see the content of some of these speeches criticizing the traditional, if we like, enemies of the United States for human rights abuses, and yet, I mean, there's a genocide and ethnic cleansing going on.
Just that little point, that wee point.
Yeah,
it's kind of glossed over.
Yeah, completely.
Okay, so let's go through some of the items that he brought up, or areas that he brought up. He's saying that over the past 25 years, there's been a shift away from open, democratic, and free systems towards more restrictive and conflict-prone environments, with recent trends exacerbating these negative shifts. Is he right, really?
Well, if we look at US campuses at the moment, he is right. But
he wasn't referring to them, though, surely.
No, not exactly. I mean, he's referring to the official enemies, but one really needs to take a good look in the mirror these days, and you would not like what you see. I mean, he's talking about the rules-based order. I mean, they're supporting a genocide. I mean, they're clamping down on freedom of speech. I mean, they're enacting laws which go against national interest and security, and doing all of these things. We just look at the COVID times, how many constitutions and national laws were violated around the world. I mean, this is by the good guys, if we...
The rules-based guys, you mean?
Yeah, exactly, the so-called good guys. I mean, it's like that moment, if you remember, on Allo, Allo, when Lieutenant Gruber has an epiphany. But we are the good guys, aren't we? So it's coming down to this point.
He's saying that the Pacific region faces increasing strategic competition and security challenges. Here we go. Including climate change threats. There it is, climate change threats. What are those threats? There's nothing definitive in that at all when it comes to climate change. We don't know. Why would he have that in there?
Well, I mean, if you look at the whole climate change narrative, it is, shall we say, not so stable anyway. I mean, one of the points they're saying is increasing CO2 levels create climate change, but we should reduce CO2 levels. But if you reduce CO2 levels, then plants begin to wither because plants require CO2. And if you don't have plants, well, you're not going to have too much else on the planet either.
So he has drunk the Kool-Aid, or does he have to say that, do you think?
I would say, given his rather quick comeback in the election, that this might be a sponsorship thing, that you need to adhere to the official narrative of your sponsor.
Yeah, whoever's paying.
Yeah.
And he talks about geopolitical pressures in the Pacific. That's a reference to China, surely.
Well, of course it is. But as the Native American Indians say, you can't clap with one hand. It takes two hands to clap. He doesn't mention the US, this AUKUS, this Quad, these different military exercises which are designed to piss off the Chinese and so forth. I mean, that he's not talking about, as well as the US fomenting trouble, for example, with the Philippines, where they got Marcos by the short and curlies, and they're Ukrainianizing the Philippines against China.
He also mentions, as part of this part of his speech, enhancing relationships, growing prosperity, strengthening security through engagement with traditional and like-minded. Who would like-minded be? Partners, especially. And here's the thing, he's even adopted that new description, Indo-Pacific region. So
which is very
that
US
is the language of... That is the language of US foreign policy, isn't it?
Yep, absolutely. No one else uses it. The Chinese have a completely different term for this. They don't talk about Indo-Pacific. So, I mean, this is a very specific US geopolitical term which has all these implications about the strategy or the geostrategy of containing China.
He's talking about AUKUS as well.
Mm-hmm.
Includes more things than just Australians buying nuclear submarines. It also includes technologies that no one's ever heard of before, like quantum processing was one of the items described. So this is all new. We haven't heard of this stuff before. So there's obviously, I don't know, things in the works there that have not been talked about, but we could become involved in. And I'm wondering, in a squeeze between China and the US, we've talked about this before, the Ukrainianizing, is that the word, of New Zealand is a possibility, isn't it? Because we've already seen it, and we know that the United States, and I used to be a fan of the United States, has been happy to see, could be up to 500,000 young men and women now go through the meat grinder for nothing. It's for nothing in Ukraine. Aren't we moving into a very dangerous zone, even talking like this?
Absolutely. It's a road to nowhere. I mean, this is why you're having this color revolution in Georgia at the moment, because they don't want to become Ukrainianized. They've already had that, and they don't want to do it again.
This is their rejection of the foreign lobbying law, right? The NGO.
Yeah, which is it's a copy of the FARA, the US law from 1938, Foreign Agent Registration Act, because this is how they do it. They use so-called NGOs to influence countries like this. And I mean, New Zealand, of course, I mean, what's the US going to do? I mean, it's going to vassalize or make New Zealand into a client state. It's what they do. It's what they've done in history. I mean, they've never been one about democracy. I mean, look what they did to Australia in the 70s, Whitlam. I mean, as soon as they got out of line, so to speak, ideologically, according to the Americans, they had this political warfare, basically, and took out the prime minister. And this is what they do. I mean, they say it openly, but people do not listen. They believe, oh, we got a special relationship with the US. That's what they tell us. Well, special relationships get you 500,000 plus dead and counting. It's problematic. To say the least. And the US will never be able to match the trade which China does. They have no intention of doing it because the trade should be going to the US benefit, not a mutual benefit. I mean, this is what they've done to Europe. I mean, look at the deindustrialization of Europe during the Ukraine war. I mean, Europe has sacrificed $1.5 trillion US dollars by imposing sanctions on Russia because the US told them to do so. And now they're probably going to get Volkswagen moving to the US.
Yeah. I think he's recently been in Europe and had meetings with NATO people. I think there was a NATO kind of semi-summit there that he attended, and also he met. He talks about meeting Polish politicians. I'm thinking of Sikorski and Duda. Duda, I think, is formerly EU. Sikorski was the guy who.
No. That's.
I got it mixed up.
Yeah, I can't remember. He's one of these boring ones.
But he's in that.
The EU put him there to get Poland in line, which is why they took Duda out of there.
Oh, okay, I got things mixed up. Well, maybe we'll remember the name of the gentleman.
Yeah, and Sikorski, of course, is completely on the US side. I mean,
he tweeted the thank you message, didn't he?
Yes, exactly.
After Nord Stream. Now, shouldn't Winston Peters be explaining why we are talking to people who are saying thank you to the US for blowing up the Nord Stream pipeline?
Well, that would be, to say the least, mildly inconvenient, because when you have transparency, you have accountability. I mean, it's like when the Swedish Prime Minister, Magdalena Andersson, said that Sweden was going to join NATO. It was like, surprise! And then she goes, there will be no public referendum because this is a matter of national security. So, yeah, I mean, it's along the same lines. This so-called liberal democracy, it's all about ideology. It's little about democracy.
He mentioned as part of his meetings there in kind of the debrief that Sweden and Finland joining NATO should send a clear message to Russia. You know, like it means something.
It doesn't. I mean, NATO have been lobbying Finland and Sweden hard. They also had, about a year after Crimea was annexed by Russia, because that had no effect on public opinion, all of a sudden you had these mysterious Russian submarines appear, which no one could prove later on. So they've been lobbying Finland and Sweden very hard for many years to join NATO. If anything, this is problematic for NATO because Sweden and Finland are not what they used to be in terms of their state capability and capacity. It also broadens the area that NATO needs to defend in case its provocations actually cause war. So And I mean, as the Finns found out in 1941, when they joined Nazi Germany to get back their lost territories, it didn't work out so well in the end. And this is a problem when you're a small country trying to join the big boys club. You're the first ones. You're the pawns, the ones that get sacrificed for the bigger game.
Donald Tusk is who I was thinking of.
Yes, exactly. Yep.
Yeah, okay. He also seems to be casting Russia as the aggressor in what's happening now. And, of course, there's a lot of rhetoric around, you know, if they get Ukraine, they'll keep on moving, even though Putin says, no, they won't. For him to talk about Russian aggression, I just can't see how, with all the information around, how he could believe that.
I get the impression that he's required to say that due to the help in the last election. This is, should we say, a debt that needs to be paid.
I was just wondering, when you're talking before, you know, you mentioned Australia, 70s, Gough Whitlam. I wonder how hard it was for Longy and co. to navigate the issues in the 80s, mid-80s with nuclear ship visits, et cetera, and leaving ANZUS. How do you think they got through that then with such pressure? Or
I do have a theory on that. Because, okay, that seems provocative, this nuclear-free, et cetera, and that did seem to annoy the Americans. But what? So you have something called strategic ambiguity. So you don't do something too far one way or too far the other way. So there's a trade-off. So they gave one thing that annoyed the Americans, nuclear-free New Zealand. They never left Five Eyes. They left that perfectly intact. And this is what would have saved them from, should we say, a sudden burst of conscience from the Governor General to sack the Prime Minister.
Longy at the time.
Yep.
Also, it's come to light through, I think, a Daily Telegraph effort through official information accessed in the United States, that Mike Pompeo and security agencies at the end of 2019 briefed New Zealand, part of Five Eyes, that it was likely a lab leak and it could be a bioweapon. Mm-hmm. That's out there now.
Yep.
I'm just wondering, do you think that would have been transmitted through to the politicians? Because we've had some stories recently where China had spying software on computers of GCSB. They knew about it, but no one, and maybe they had their reasons for letting it go because they might be able to back channel follow it. Also, there was some spying going on that they knew about. They never told the politicians. Is it possible that they might not have?
It's very possible. I mean, you had this nonsense recently with the spy scandal in New Zealand, where you had, I think it was the SIS, if I'm not wrong, which were doing something nefarious and had, in their infinite wisdom, decided not to inform key politicians, which they're legally obliged to do so.
But in the COVID case, that was so risky, wasn't it? And then as it developed, you could see that there were adverse effects and it hadn't been tested, and human rights, Bill of Rights, medical freedom, all of that was being clamped down on. Two-tier society, it all happened here. I'm sure it happened. Mm-hmm. Not so much in Sweden, but certainly all around. And they still didn't say anything?
Yeah. No, because there is no transparency. If you have transparency, you have accountability. These ones don't want to be held accountable. Remember that time, I think it was Key, who was abroad, when it was illegal to for the SIS to spy on New Zealanders without a warrant. And then it was leaked to the parliament and then subsequently to the public that 60 or so plus people had been spied on without warrants. What was the response? Key came back and changed the law and made it legal. I mean, this is what they do.
Boy. So he said In a response to critics, he made this point: government addresses criticism regarding foreign policy shifts and AUKUS involvement, defending its approach as pragmatic, responsible, and in line with national interests. Pragmatic.
Ideological. Pragmatic
about what? About not being rogered by the US?
Well, that's the pragmatism, that you somehow become a submissive, some kind of submissive to the US. And, of course, I mean, it comes at a cost. So pragmatically speaking, there are massive negative consequences for New Zealand, done in the name of not pragmatism but ideology, because you're having this the US is in decline. It's trying to slow down and, if possible, freeze that decline. And it's
he knows that the US most likely, almost definitely, blew up that Nord Stream pipeline, Germany's lifeline to affordable energy and their industrial power.
Base. Yeah.
So if he knows that, he knows that that could happen to us.
Yes. And he's exposing New Zealand to this by doing what he's doing.
Right, let's move on to the China Council speech. The importance of China. He recognises China's pivotal role globally due to its population, economy and influence, obviously, emphasising the opportunities and challenges it presents. I'm just wondering where the opportunities go if China perceives that we're kind of, I don't want to use the word the enemy, but more of an enemy than not.
Yeah, well, I mean, if...
Well, do they have a different way of thinking about these things?
Yeah. No, well, if New Zealand would essentially become, if you like, to use the slang derogatory, the GIMP of the United States. And, I mean, if that does come, it will come with a consequence. And I noticed that this speech came two days after. So this was on the 3rd, after his first.
Oh, so damage control?
The China talk came... Yeah. 2 days after. It was on the 3rd of May. The other one was on the 1st of May.
Yeah, I'm wondering if that's some kind of damage control given the sequence. Yeah,
almost definitely. But, I mean, he approaches the damage control like Biden and these other ones. It's like, we deplore genocide, but, hey, we'll keep on supplying the weapons to enable it and the political cover. So what he says here, China is so important to us. But, I mean, China really needs to up its game with its human rights record. I mean, what is it? And, I mean, are you going to say that to the US, your sponsor, most likely? I mean, they're supporting genocide. I mean, Israel has been through the International Court of Justice. And you're having you had this letter by 12 US members of Congress threatening the ICC judges, the staff, and the families of the judges if they make the wrong decision with regards to warrants for Israeli war criminals.
Just flicking back to the previous speech, something you just said reminded me, and the Gaza, Israel situation. He's obviously saying, you know, there should be a ceasefire. We're voting for that in the UN and we support that. But he's not supporting any talk of a Palestinian state until this is all sort of over and sorted. That's all very well. But the place is rubble.
Yeah. And now they're attacking Rafah, which is the last part.
There's nothing left. It's happened already. Could he be so blind?
I think it's what you would call selective blindness. Because, of course, I mean, how do you miss this thing? But to act upon it requires agency and the ability to do something independent. Obviously, if he's acting the way he is, he has no agency. He's been told what to say and do. I mean, it's like, can a mainstream politician in the US criticize Israel? No, they can't. I mean, they're even enacting laws which makes it illegal to criticize Israel, even though that is contrary to the US Constitution.
Yeah, I mean, common sense, surely, and what do I know, dumb guy on the street here, that now is the time to be talking about a Palestinian state, because otherwise it's a disaster. It's gone. It's a nightmare.
Yeah.
So now's the time, you would think.
No, I mean, he has no moral or ethical fortitude. He's, and someone who acts like that is obviously not free to do and act according to a clean conscience.
Could he get away with saying these things but doing something different behind the scenes?
Well, that's the problem. Once you sell your soul, you belong to someone. And if you try and get it back, then there will be consequences. The point is not to sell your soul in the first place. Otherwise, you put yourself in that predicament.
He talks about areas of cooperation with China, economic ties, trade, investment, climate change, collaboration. There it is again. As if China gives a hoot about climate change. They're putting more into the atmosphere than the rest of the world combined. Scientific cooperation and people-to-people connections as vital aspects of the relationship. How do the Chinese, do you think, view this? I mean, they're kind of pragmatic as well in the end, aren't they?
They're very realist-oriented.
And they can let all these other people lose their heads and go crazy and jump around and say all sorts of things. But in the end, they know they've got 1.8 billion people. They're probably the most powerful nation, actually, in the end, if it came to a fight on the planet. So they probably don't have too much to feel insecure about. Maybe they're more insecure about their own population turning on them. So how do you think they view what they might be hearing from our foreign minister?
They'll be just thinking he's just another puppet, right. And that eventually it comes a time to remind the puppet actions have consequences. Because if we remember the time some years ago when you had 800 US Marines deployed up in northern Queensland, initially the Chinese made a big hoopla about it. They banned Australian coal. They did all kinds of different economic warfare things, made some political statements. But this was a reminder that the Australian economy was dependent on trade with China. And so, I mean, this was intended to train them. And then you had a little while later when the US announced that they were going to create a little carrier fleet in Perth. And actually, the Australians said no, because they understood that the consequences will be economically catastrophic for them if they go ahead. So if you have this in a sense, as soon as New Zealand and Peters runs the mouth too much and goes overboard, there will be a reminder, like Australia had, like other countries do have, that if you do this, it will not be pretty. And if you continue with it, then you're on your own and there is no special relationship.
He talks about addressing differences, acknowledging differences in history, culture, political systems between New Zealand and China, advocating for mature, that's nice, dialogue and transparency in addressing concerns, including human rights. He talks about concerns over regional stability, particularly in the South China Sea and Taiwan Strait, urging adherence to international law, peaceful resolution of conflicts. Seems to me that it's kind of got the same feel as the way, again, Russia has talked about in regards to Ukraine, which ignores completely how they got there. Can we believe that China is about to invade Taiwan? Why would they want to do that?
They don't want to, because that goes against their interests. Chinese, unlike the West, are very patient. They know in 40 years, 50 years, 100 years from now, maybe you'll just get a reunion without bloodshed. And they can wait that out. I mean, what are they? About 5,000-6,000 years old as a civilization. So, I mean, their understanding of time is utterly different. I mean, this is just garbage. And, I mean, why are you stationing U.S. special forces on islands which are within eye view of Chinese mainland? I mean, how is that about confidence building and peace building measures?
It's well, what not. Would happen if China rocked up at, you know, one of those islands 20 k's off the coast of Los Angeles and hung out there?
Well, that would be against international law, blah, 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 blah. An act of aggression, of course, unlike anything the West does. I mean, the rest of the world sees this hypocrisy now because, I mean, it's so blatant. I mean, before, I mean, you had some measure. I mean, it wasn't quite so overboard as it is now. And, I mean, this is why, I mean, who was it? It was Scholz when he went to China. Who was he met by at the airport? The deputy mayor.
Deputy
of
mayor.
Beijing.
That's right.
I mean, the Chinese do things in a more subtle way, and I mean this is their way of showing it. I mean, it's like when this Yellen went to China, head of the Fed, and Big demanded, "Oh, you're outproducing us industrially."
Overcapacity is the term.
I mean, the West is not in a position to demand or set the rules. I mean, they've lost the high ground, and they're only going to go back with the stupidity that they're doing.
He's encouraging China to play a constructive role in addressing international security challenges, such as conflicts in Ukraine, the Middle East, North Korea's nuclear program. Let's just go through those quickly. Ukraine, that conflict could be addressed immediately if they got together and accepted the quite, I would say, pragmatic demands of Russia, given the history. It could all be over tomorrow. No talk of doing that. Middle East, we've just touched on Gaza and Israel, but it's bigger than that. It's Iran. It's all those other countries. Well, not moving on a Palestinian state is not very constructive there. Yeah. And North Korea's nuclear program, well, I'm no fan of North Korea, but what do you expect them to do?
I mean, their conclusion, which is quite rational and logical, is if you do not have nuclear weapons, you get regime changed by humanitarian military operation. I mean, this is their conclusion, and it's the correct one. If you give those up, they have zero incentive to give it up and every incentive to build it up. So, I mean, and the West is primarily responsible for that, because who would trust them by now? I mean, their word is worth nothing.
And he also mentions that we should be working with like-minded partners to advance common interests while maintaining independence in decision-making. Yeah. Like-minded partners. Well, if it's the US and the Five Eyes and the NATO EU, then I don't know if I like that kind of like-mindedness.
No.
It doesn't sound good to me. And that means that we're like them. Or he's thinking like them. That's a worry, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, these are not the kind of people you want to be like-minded with. And increasingly, these are the ones that are increasingly isolated globally.
Hmm. Okay, so I guess he's sort of laid it out pretty clear. We can deduce, I think. Do you think it's fair to say we can deduce quite a bit from what he said?
Yeah, I mean, he sold out to the US and is going to abandon this strategic ambiguity which New Zealand has been going by so far to maximise strengths and opportunities and to balance that against weaknesses and threats. That's gone. So now, I mean, you're going to amplify the weaknesses and threats. The main weakness, New Zealand economy, is going to be even more devastated. because it will, in all probability, at this trajectory, lose China. And if you lose that, I mean, the US isn't going to take up the slack. It's not capable. I mean, their economy is equally shabby and in tatters. And threats.
Okay. All right. So how would you sum it up, the contents of those two speeches from Winston Peters this month?
Well, it's somewhere between FUBAR and SNAFU. I mean, it's problematic if we put it in a very diplomatic term, because what he's signaling is he's fighting for the deck chairs on the Titanic as it sinks. This is essentially what he's doing. And the whole country will suffer as a result of that.
Do you think there's a chance, we'll give him an opportunity here, that to have this coalition arrangement, he needs to be talking like this? Because I'm sure the National Party think this, they're steeped in this. ACT will, I guess, have an attitude towards Russia, which will be predictable, etc. But they you'd think they know about the downside of annoying China. I'm just wondering if it could be possible that he doesn't believe this, but has to do this. You know, I'm trying to find some wiggle room for him.
Well, I mean, perhaps. I mean, he's not stupid. This is the point. So in all likelihood, he probably doesn't believe what he's saying, but is obliged to do so because you've got such a low form of servile politics to Washington, D.C. So there is no room out of it. So, I mean, eventually this becomes self-fulfilling, and then you have the slide down. I mean, it's like the issue, if we look just before the Ukraine war started, Zelensky did try to have a little bit of wriggle room. I mean, for example, when the US was going about this imminent and inevitable Russian invasion, and Zelensky actually asked Biden to provide solid proof. And the proof provided was that the Americans flew in Poroshenko, the previous president, to say, well, if you don't do it, he will do it. So you can see that the room of independence and room for maneuver gets very narrow. And, of course, the moment he agreed to it, you can't back out of it. It's like, as the Americans said themselves, I think it was Kissinger, to be an enemy of the United States can be dangerous. To be a friend is fatal.
Okay, so we've been discussing some of the points out from that have come out from two speeches given by Winston Peters, 1st of May and 3rd of May, to the New Zealand Institute of International Affairs and to the China Council. I'll give you the official name. Yeah, the New Zealand China Council. Before you go, Greg, I want to just ask you a couple more things. Just in the last very short time, the Foreign Minister of Russia, Sergei Lavrov, has summoned British and French ambassadors to the Kremlin to warn them that an attack on Russian territory with long-range weapons, their long-range weapons, may prompt a Russian response against UK and French bases. This starts to get a little scary.
Well, I mean, they dug their own grave. I mean, they've been making these stupid, provocative statements. Ukraine, you can use our weapons to target whatever targets in Russia proper. And, of course, it's understood, and the Russians will know, that it's not the Ukrainians that are programming these missiles to go there. These are programmed by French and British crews. They are trained to do that. This is an act of war. And, I mean, he's absolutely legitimate to say that because, this is according to the UN Charter, the right to self-defense. I mean, these idiotic statements, what purpose do they serve? I mean, Ukraine is lost.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what more do you want to do? I mean, I think this is in part why this this military exercise involving tactical nuclear weapons has been announced by Putin.
Yeah.
Because this is a response to that stupidity. Rather than back down from the stupidity, they double down on it because for some reason they seem to have this idea that it's a matter of pride that they somehow continue because they said that Russia would lose, that this is in the bag, and now all of a sudden you have this situation. These people are not the sharpest knives in the drawer. You cut your losses at some point, but they just keep on doubling down on stupid.
Unless there's some secret weapon we don't know about. Palestinian protesters at universities, Palestine University protesters, their treatment in the media.
Mm-hmm.
What does that tell us? I mean, when I was young, I went on a few protests of things that I didn't like, apartheid, we were out on the streets, all of that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And we were kind of pointed at and spat at a bit, usually by rugby fans who were annoyed about their test series being
interrupted.
Interfered. Though I think most people thought, yeah, well, that's fair enough. You know, you legislate people as second-class citizens, which happened here recently almost. That's fair enough. But it seems to me that there's a sort of a narrative operating whenever it comes to particularly young people, university protesters, out there in support of Palestine. So what is the media, what's your assessment of the treatment by the media of them?
Well, the rules-based order terminology, the regime media are merely supporting the political narrative because, it's lost. I mean, public opinion's lost. I mean, I was on Iranian TV not so long ago, and this issue came up, and I made the analogy. I mean, okay, you're having all the repressions now, but, I mean, the same thing happened if we look at the 1970s with regards to Vietnam protests. They tried to ignore it. Then they tried to repress it with increasingly harsh measures, which resulted in Kent State University. And then that didn't work, and eventually the protesters prevailed. I said, you've got a similar trajectory at the moment. First of all, they tried to ignore it. Then they're trying to condemn and use overwhelming disproportionate coercive force. And this is not working because they're not backing down. I mean, they have those counter protests, these police ones. And then at the same time, they're criticizing China and Russia for lack of freedom of speech and expression.
Yeah.
It's quite impressive.
Circling back to Gaza, Israel, Gaza ceasefire. Hamas has agreed to a ceasefire, I see. So does that mean it can now happen?
No, because Israel doesn't want it. They see this, they're still looking for this George Bush moment, mission accomplished. And this hasn't been done yet because mission accomplished is no longer the defeat of Hamas as a political organization or a military organization. It is the complete removal or destruction of Palestinian presence on territory which they consider part of Greater Israel. And so, the Israelis have been atrocious in terms of their adherence to previous ceasefires and agreements. They're about as reliable as the Americans when it comes to that. they just regularly break them. You know, part of the rules-based order thing.
Oh, not the rules-based order again.
Oh, yes.
And last point quickly for a comment. You mentioned Rafah before. I understand that Israel has taken control of the Gaza side of that border. So yeah. Is that offensive now, do you think, inevitable?
Yeah, I mean, it's starting up because Netanyahu is upping the ante, because if this somehow simmers down and you get some kind of cold peace maybe, then he's out, and he's probably going to go to jail because of the corruption charges which were pending before the war began.
Okay, great to catch up again with Associate Professor Tareba University Riga, based in Uppsala, Sweden. Greg Simons, always good to talk, and this won't be the last, I'm telling you.
No, you can't get enough of the good news.
With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate.